This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
In the late 70s and into the 80s, Brooke Shields was one of the most famous and controversial people in America. But if she was somehow notorious, it had nothing to do with her exactly. It was the position that she was put in as a child actress and as a young model. When she was 11, she starred in Pretty Baby, playing a child prostitute. And when she was 15, she starred in a heavy-breathing desert island love story called Blue Lagoon. And there was a notorious series of ads for Calvin Klein jeans that set a new benchmark for skeezy suggestiveness. So for a while there, Brooke Shields seemed to be at the center of everything that appalled or titillated people about the era. A new documentary about the life of Brooke Shields is airing next week on Hulu.
My next guest is really a beautiful young lady who at 13 has already achieved an incredible amount of recognition. Brooke Shields starred in the highly publicized film Pretty Baby. And she's the subject of a new book called The Brooke Book. She is quite a fascinating young lady. Would you welcome, please, Miss Brooke Shields.
Shields spoke the other day with The New Yorker's Michael Shulman.
I really didn't realize the extent to which you lived your entire life in the public eye. I mean, it seems like you were, from infancy, you were modeling. Do you have memories of, like, coming to realize that your life was unusual in some way?
Here's the problem with that way of, not your way of thinking, but that kind of rationale is I never knew anything different. So I think I've seen, especially actors, go from anonymity to fame sort of in one movie or overnight. And the shock to their system, how much their world changes, is what undoes them, you know? Whereas I only knew working, and I only knew school and jobs. That's what you did. And I only worked from 3 o'clock on, even if they would be like, oh, there's a 10 o'clock appointment for her. And my mom would be like, all right, we'll see you at 3. You know, and they were like, but it's at 10 o'clock. And she's like, she's in school.
Right. So much of the documentary are these clips of you on talk shows sitting across from some middle-aged man asking you to essentially defend yourself or asking creepy, prurient questions about your sexuality or your love life. And then you are usually sitting next to your mother and kind of making the case for how this is fine. And I just, there's so many of those clips. And I, in a way, I feel like self-conscious right now because I'm also someone doing that in a way, like asking you about the kind of complicated morality of this work. But how did you feel sort of sitting in those chairs, like being on talk shows, being sort of interrogated like that?
It just never ended. I mean, there were some clips later where, or maybe this one made it in, I don't know, where you can see me go, oh, here we go again. Like I became this, like, you know, vaudeville kind of like, oh, like, here comes, you know, like a question or whatever. And I just sort of, I think it made me lose so much respect for the, excuse me, but the press, because there was no one place that had even a modicum of integrity.
Brooke, what are your measurements?
I'm 5'10 and 120.
I think when people see you, they don't realize.
And to have Barbara Walters talk about my measurements, to have, you know, Phil Donahue or these people, you know, Tom Snyder, and, you know, and they just like sort of, there was nothing intellectual about it. And so you saw these adults who you thought were supposed to be the smart people in the world be so lowest common denominator that I just became sort of shut down to all of it, because I thought, here we go again. You know, and you watch this little girl and you think, shame on you guys. Like, to me, I've put more blame and shame on the interviewers and the press than I ever would about Pretty Baby, the subject or the content or the, like, that knew exactly what it set out to do. Mm-hmm. And it was an artistic endeavor. Then you get to these journalists and you think, how is that okay to talk to a child like that?
Right. It's, you know, very uncomfortable to watch.
It's uncomfortable to watch. And it's so, and I just learned at a very young age, you know, not to really trust people. And, you know, I used to think, oh, if I say this, I'll be liked, or, oh, the journalist is going to get it. They're going to see it, you know? And I just learned at a very early age that wasn't the nature of the industry, mm-hmm. you know?
What I want to talk about next is a very complicated thing, which is Pretty Baby, not only the name of your documentary, but of course was also your breakout role in 1978 in the Louis Malle film, which...
Breakout role.
Is that
so funny?
Is that not the way to say
no,
it?
No, it's, I mean, the way, it's just so, it's so funny looking, like re-examining all of this and sort of thinking like, yeah, that's what they call a breakout.
This is Brooke Shields. Breathtaking in her screen debut. Constantly changing. Always surprising. Like the image of...
Do you think I'm pretty?
Yes, I certainly do.
You love my mother more than me. I know about those things better than you. You always know those things about men when you're a woman.
I watched it recently for the first time, and honestly, I loved it, but I also do not know what to think about it.
See, I think it's the most beautiful movie I've ever made. I think it's the only real quality film I've ever really been in. Mm. Like, I value that movie so in such a different way, and wrote my thesis on it. And the sort of the I'm fascinated with that journey of innocence to experience,
right?
You know,
right.
And how, who owns it, and how they. You know, do they become a victim to it or do they not? And I don't know. It's just very interesting to me, that movie. You couldn't make it today. Obviously, that's what the big theme is now. It's like, oh, you couldn't make that movie today. I mean, you couldn't.
But it is a beautifully done film. And it's, you know, it's about a young woman who lives in a whorehouse in turn of the century New Orleans. And this young girl's transition from, in a way, as you were saying, thinking, not knowing that this isn't anything but normal.
Right.
And then kind of following her mother's footsteps and, you know, becoming a sex worker herself. How was the character and the plot described to you, and who described it?
I went in and just talked with Polly Platt and with Louis Malle. And he just asked me questions like, are you aware of what prostitution is? And I was like, yeah, you know, I often see on 42nd Street, the girls standing on the corner, and, you know, I always worry that they're cold, and, you know, and so I just told him those stories about that. And growing up in Manhattan, you know, I was a city kid. So, and I was a city kid with a single mom. So, I saw New York in the 70s in a very sort of raw way. That was how I grew up. And then he just, you know, asked me questions about the era, you know, the early 1900s and what the wardrobe looked like. And he said, you know, we're telling the story. It's a true story. It's about a young girl, and it's a love story. Ostensibly, it's a love story, but it's also, he wouldn't have said coming of age at that point because I don't think I would have understood it. But he was talking about the mother and the daughter. And we talked about like my hobbies, like what I liked doing. I liked riding horses. And I think he just wanted, it wasn't about a proficient performer or a Lolita. It was about an innocent and how that innocence gets sort of taken, but her choice to not be a victim. And you see it at the end of the film cinematically when she turns around and looks into the camera. And it's the first time she, you know, looks right down the barrel of the lens. And there's a young sort of newsy boy behind her and he's blurred. And that's the last sort of frame and how she sort of turns that being sheep in a voyeuristic environment. She then turns it around and says, okay, I'm in control now. You want me to put a bow in my hair and be a kid? I gotcha. And it's this like, to me, I don't think I knew that until later when I really analyzed the film.
Right. I'm always fascinated by what child actors understand about what they're doing, especially when they give an incredible film performance.
Well, it's hard to know, you know, no one was teaching me anything. So I wasn't being shepherded in any way. But it was interesting because when I had the kissing scene with Keith.
Keith Carradine, who plays the photographer who becomes your
husband.
Your husband.
We get married. And I had never, you know, kissed a boy before. And
you're 11 in this movie,
11,
right?
I'm 11. And I didn't know how to do that. And I had a kiss. And I was like, oh God, I don't know what to do. And so I kept scrunching up my face and the director kept getting mad at me. And so Keith says, can I just have a minute with her? And he said, you know, I mean, he was in a very difficult position. I think he must have. I mean, I don't know. I never really spoke to him about it in later years, but it must have been kind of just hard for him, you know, because
yeah, time to kiss an 11-year-old.
I know. I mean, it's weird. And he said to me, you know, this doesn't count as a first kiss. Mm-hmm. And I will always be thankful for that.
It's just so different from anything now. And I love how the documentary ends with you talking to your daughters, who I guess are Gen Zers.
I guess, yeah, I think so. They're 16 and 19.
You haven't seen Pretty Baby, you haven't seen Blue Lagoon, no. You haven't seen Endless Love.
No. I will never, ever watch Blue Lagoon. Sorry.
Okay.
Why not Blue Lagoon?
Because she's like naked.
No, I've seen Pretty Baby edits on TikTok and it makes me not want to watch it.
Shh.
Because it's like the movie itself is like that. This is nothing against. No.
I'm not talking personally.
The movie itself is like about something that's not okay now, right?
See, I never saw Pretty Baby. Is there nudity in it?
Yes.
Are you nude?
I'm nude twice. With my little 11-year-old body.
Yeah, that's weird.
Weird. Why wouldn't you be able to see that movie today? Why wouldn't that movie be able to be made today? Like, it's just everything's changed.
It's called child pornography, technically.
You were 11. You weren't mature enough to be making your own decisions. And other people signed off being like, oh, no, she's fine. You can take her top off. She's fine.
They blew me away at the end of because they weren't prompted at all. And I didn't know that they were aware of any of that or thought that way or, you know, and it was interesting that to see them say that what they felt about it.
Right.
You know, and I was proud of them for being able to be able to talk about all of it. I mean, I don't know. It's again, you know, you can't really say like, oh, it was just a different era. It was a different era.
Mm-hmm.
And
Gen Z knows so much about consent now and thinks about it a lot.
Right.
That that seemed to be what your daughters were saying, is mm-hmm. that how could you have had consent over being nude at 11?
And you wouldn't, I wouldn't have known to say no, or that I could have said no. But it also didn't occur to me to say no.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And it seemed like, and this is one thing I really learned watching the documentary, is that basically everything you did became what we would, in the present time, call a discourse, you know, whether it was the Calvin Klein mm-hmm. commercials, which people thought were too sexy.
You want to know what comes between me and my Calvins? Nothing.
Calvin Klein jeans.
I was curious if you've read the supermodel Emily Ratajkowski's book, My Body.
No, but I'm going to be on her podcast and she's going to be on mine. And so I'm getting the book and I'm going to read it, obviously, before I speak to her.
I mean, yeah, well,
it's interesting.
I was thinking about watching the documentary about you because, like you, she was, you know, the face. And in this book, it's a book of essays, and she really grapples with what it means to kind of like make a living off of your image and your beauty. Wait, I'm gonna. I have a quote from it that I thought was really. Whatever influence and status I've gained were only granted to me because I appealed to men. My position brought me in close proximity to wealth and power and brought me some autonomy, but it hasn't resulted in true empowerment. And she's talking about sort of participating in like the influencer economy and sort of being the face of whatever brands, you know. And I'm curious, like, do you, you know, when you, you know, had the Calvin Klein jeans ads, it almost seems like a catch-22 in that, you know, you're sort of criticized for being too sexy in those ads. And yet also the people doing that are like, the people profiting from it is Calvin Klein jeans.
But that's your job. I mean, you're selling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I can't be a hypocrite. And on the one hand say, I'm going to sell your stuff and I'm going to sell it however I can, you know? And if this is what it is, then that's what I'm going to do. Cause it was acting, you know, but I don't then get to turn around and sort of negate it or put it down or say like, oh, I'm being used. Yeah. That's what you do. You know, it's like, right. I don't believe in like this righteous kind of all of a sudden. It's like, I'm sorry, but you know exactly you're making money and you're selling something. And in most cases, you know, sex sells, right? So come on, like, just shut the
up. Yeah.
Like, you know, you go, oh, I'm being objectified. You're a model.
Right.
It's the point. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not being negative about that because I think she's very right about what her perception of that is. But by the same token, like, I don't believe in having a poor me.
Well, in a way, what you're saying is very consistent with what you were saying at 12 and 15 on these talk shows, which is that I knew exactly what I was doing getting to this, and it's fine. I mean, do you feel like what has changed, if anything, about your perspective on your early career just as you've gotten older and lived more life? I mean, do you feel like you have the same opinion on it as you did then?
Pretty much. I mean, yes, I answer my children and saying, you know, would that be a world that I would put them in then or now? And the answer is no, but they're different people. This is a different time and I have a different perspective, but I don't, do I have a different perspective about my career? I think I don't think I've really changed. I mean, I feel like at every step of the way, every time someone criticized, it so clearly became about them to me.
Mm.
You know, and I would watch it time and time and time again. And I'd think, you're the one with the problem and you want me to have this problem.
Mm.
And I can't grant you that because I don't That is not my perspective. Now, that's hard for you to take because then I'm not a victim. Then what does that mean? And then it reflects back onto you in some way that you think. Like, so I'm proud of the way that I was able to maintain my point of view.
The documentary Pretty Baby, Brooke Shields, is on Hulu starting April 3rd. You can also read her interview with Michael Shulman at newyorker.com.